1935, the Lions win the NFL championship. The Detroit Tigers take the World Series. The Red Wings bring home Lord Stanley's Cup. Joe Louis begins his rise to world domination. This transforms the Motor City into Detroit, City of Champions.
And with that, we are throwing the anchor overboard. Detroit, City of Champions, the podcast. We are deep into the Gar Woods story. Miss America 10, they're building, rebuilding the boat, tearing it apart. It's just amazing. All these quotes from Speedboat Kings. It's just an astounding story as they just rip up the water. They cannot get the boat to plane. They've tried 12 different times, 12 different configurations. They're running out of time. And that's where we left off last time, trying to get this boat to do what it's supposed to do. And we're going to throw it back in the water. I'm going to throw it back to Charles, and we're going to continue with Detroit City of Champions. But first, I'm going to ask you to like, subscribe, leave a comment, do that for us, all those podcasty things you do while listening to a podcast. Like, subscribe, leave a comment, and then the most important of them all, tell a couple friends. Truly, genuinely appreciate it, and we appreciate you coming along for the ride. All right, here we go. Gar Wood, more of it on Detroit City of Champions, the podcast.
You know, what we were saying, the main issue going into the race for Gar Wood was that this a dozen times they tried to get this boat to plane. They've got a metal plane in the back. Everything depends on this boat planing because the boat can't take the pounding on the wood.
The engine's too much. If it does that dolphin thing, you are done for.
You're done. It's going to chop up the boat. It's done. Exactly.
And you won't have the speed. Mm-hmm. You won't have the speed. And it'll probably rip the boat to shreds.
There you go. Exactly.
Those four engines will be at the bottom of Lake St. Clair.
Yes, and their boat might have more horsepower, but if the other boat has is skimming across the surface using all 4,000 of its horsepower, then you're done. So that's going to be like the main theme. So that's why I really want to drive that home is the issue is that there's 12 times going into this race. They're already on short schedule trying to rebuild all the engines. Right, they're already on a short schedule redoing all the engines, and they took it out a dozen times trying to get it to plane, and it never planed. So, so this is like setting the stage for like what in a movie would be like one of the greatest sort of endings. I mean, we have a whole other episode to go, but this is what like you could leave it. You could almost leave it off at this story that we're about to read here as like the culmination. You know, as a phenomenal culmination. So. Leading into this, the boat's not planing. They're trying over and over. They've done all these things. They can't get it to go. So the 1932 Harmsworth race, and again, out of J. Lee Barrett, Speedboat Kings. So Wood and Johnson went into the race with an unbalanced boat on a course trimmed with whitecaps in a driving rain. It was all they could do. The course was too rough for racing boats, but the English wanted to race, so the race was run. Don led Wood over the starting line while Johnson was busy repairing a broken gas pipe. They were 20 seconds late going across. Already, Don had a commanding lead, and Don kept the lead for four laps. Wood and Johnson could not gain. They didn't dare open up the throttles in a boat that was out of line. The high seas would break it in two. Besides, the rain, even at 60 miles an hour, hit them full in the face like bullets. Don was far, far in the lead. The crowd, the judges, everyone was ready to concede the race to Don. But something happened. Maybe it was this luck that has been riding in Wood's boats and his two teddy bears. Maybe it wasn't. I don't know. At any rate, Don was on his fourth lap between the two southerly buoys, about 2 miles in the lead. Then it happened. The tenth straightened out. The boat had suddenly, almost miraculously, sprung itself into line. It was planing beautifully.
Uh-huh.
The jarring of the high seas had sprung her. Wood and Johnson were completely surprised. They started after Don, but something else happened. Just as Johnson pulled open the throttles, Wood was flooded with benzol. The fuel was spraying from a broken overflow pipe beside Wood. When Johnson saw what was happening, he cut down the throttle again. They couldn't go on like that. Johnson jumped up and made what carburetor adjustments he could in that bounding boat. Then he sat down again, holding the throttles down to about 50 miles an hour. And all this time, the rain was pelting down like lead bullets, and Wood's face and hands were burning like acid from the spraying benzol. Johnson didn't know what to do. He couldn't pull open the throttles. If he did, the engines were in danger of backfiring, and Wood would have been a human torch. But because the backfire pop-off valves were only 6 inches from Wood's knees. Wood knew that, too. He knew if those engines ever backfired, as they often do when Johnson pulled open the throttles, he'd burn up like paper. In fact, the whole boat would have been blown to pieces. But there was Don gaining on them every second. When Wood thought of Don, he acted. He gave Johnson the signal for open throttle. To hell with the Benzol, he told himself. Give her the gun, Orlin. Let's go. When Johnson got the signal, he thought Wood had gone mad. But he didn't hesitate. He didn't hesitate. He pulled open the throttles. The Miss America 10 spurted ahead like a rocket. Just as the boat leaped, Johnson caught the figure of the teddy bears flying past. The wire holding them to the engines had snapped. Johnson made a dive for them and just got his fingers on the flying wire in time. The teddy bears were saved. Wood said after the race, I could have kissed Johnson when he saved those teddy bears. The Miss America 10 was closing on Don, swiftly. Don, meanwhile, didn't know what was happening. When he turned around suddenly and saw Wood only 200 yards behind him, he was surprised. Don controls his fuel with his right foot. By pressing forward, he feeds fuel to both engines. By shifting his foot to the right or left, he cuts down on either port to the starboard engine. Don jammed his foot down on the throttle to the starboard engine. The throttle control jerked loose. The port engine froze. Dick Garner, one of Don's mechanics, went aft and tried to hold the throttle connection. He was badly burned and had to be taken to the hospital immediately after the race. Don's port engine was crippled, but he tried gamely to keep ahead of Wood. Every time he'd press his foot control, the engine stacks would belch smoke and fire. Don's world record holder was limping badly, crippled, out of the race. Wood and Johnson passed Don at the beginning of the fifth and last lap. They stayed there, in the lead. At the closing gun, they were over 2 miles ahead. After Don crossed the finish line, he immediately headed the bow of his boat toward Henry B. Joy Boatwell and started to call wildly for a tow. His boat was sinking. The stern was dangerously low in the water. Don and his mechanics stood upright in the bow of the boat ready to jump into the lake. While Don kept calling for Pales to bail his boat out, the Miss England 3 was docked, bailed out, and strung up in her cradle. Don and his men took off their riding clothes, dressed, and walked out. About 4 o'clock the next morning, the mechanics came back and started to touch up the engines. Meanwhile, I had gone over to Wood's home at Greyhaven, where Wood had taken his Miss America 10. Wood and his men were working in his yard that night under strong floodlights. His boat was strewn all over the yard. His boat was strewn all over the yard. His engines were all apart, and the men were measuring the pistons, the rings, everything. A few of the men were rebuilding the broken transom. It had ripped off in the race. They were building it sturdier this time. All this is routine with Wood and his men. All Saturday night, Sunday, and Sunday night, they worked, checking every inch of those engines in the hull. Wood was making an aluminum visor to protect his and Johnson's face from the rain and the wind. Johnson was working on the carburetors. Lycee was checking over every possible strain in the hull. John Brewer, Frank Calveridge, Joseph Schaefer, Vance Smith, and MJ Steele of Packard were there working fast, and Earl Twining, too, of Champion Spark Plug Company. The second race was won before Wood put his Miss America 10 in the water again. It was won in Wood's yard under those floodlights. What happened in the second heat of the race? Don didn't get around one lap of the course. The broken piston tore through the cylinder wall with a deafening roar. The boat was disabled and towed off the lake. Wood and Johnson went on to finish the heat and keep the trophy. 500,000 Americans and Canadians were stunned. Here was an English boat that had traveled 120 miles an hour in England during the summer. It was the finest piece of engineering ever produced by British minds. And yet, there it was, limping off the course after traveling scarcely 7 miles before these amazed throngs. They still said, these people, that Wood was lucky. But they didn't know the hell Wood and his men had gone through for the past 12 days. Isn't that fucking awesome? They're like, he was lucky. And they're like, really?
There's no luck.
Really?
There's no luck.
He tore engines apart.
That's grit.
Ben Gorlin Johnson nearly dies. They're bringing
grit.
Every single thing they're doing is tearing, you know, like they're building boats, tearing boats apart, working on a flight. They nonstop. They're like, some people said Garwood was lucky.
Oh,
you know, you're out of your mind. Luck had, I mean, sure, the teddy bears came in handy. I mean, it didn't hurt.
Yeah.
But they made, that's what I'm saying. Like, this is, like I say, this is the founding of America. Like, this is Americana. This is America. This is Detroit folklore. This is like, this right here, like, if, you know, like any time, like, you know, we talk about the Motor City image, Henry Ford, these different things. This guy here. This is the Motor City. This is one of the greatest stories of the Motor City and the automotive, the mechanical, all this. This guy right here, this guy should have a statue in downtown Detroit.
Yeah, it's the grit,
just
the determination. and just
he should have a statue in downtown Detroit as a mainstream representative of the city of Detroit, of the the perseverance of American industry. Like you have a person like a capitalist who made his own money, who took that money and turned it into a passion project in which he pushed the boundaries. We were talking to Roger last week about how what happened to the engines in the Miss America 10? They went into helping the U.S. war effort so they could build PT boat and landing boats for Normandy and that. You know, yeah. They use the engines for making boats for the war effort. You know, like whatever happened to the engines, we don't know because the U.S. government used them to create as prototypes to use for the boats that, you know, gave American advantage in World War II. That's Detroit.
Yes.
That's Garwood. These are these people that are like, I mean, this story of Garwood. When I first started this project, I didn't know anything. I'd never even heard the name Garwood. Never heard his name. And this I'm saying I don't think it's because I'm like some kind of an idiot. Right? It's because nobody ever, this is the stories that need to be taught and told and brought back to the modern day and celebrated at different events, mainstream events, even if it's a Tigers, Lions, Red Wings, whatever modern day
Garwood
stuff.
Garwood Day.
Yes.
Garwood Night.
Well, whatever it is, it needs to be brought out regardless of sport, regardless of things. These kind of stories are what shaped this city, what gave it the sort of, you know, the prestige, the elan, the personality, the reputation that we have today began with these types. You see, and that's what I'm saying. Like this guy, I mean, he embodies it. Yeah. He embodies it. He radiates it. And that's what I'm saying. Like this is, you know, it's like they said he's lucky. They still said these people that Wood was lucky, but they didn't know the hell Wood and his men had gone through for the past 12 days. They had no idea. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm saying. Like it's, and the people today have no idea. You know, like this story. I mean, this is a standalone movie by itself.
And really, it's they was standing there at that at the stern of the boat in those two little seats, and they are literally straddling the engines.
You can't even see over the front of the boat.
No, we tried seeing.
You can't even see.
We tried getting in.
You can see out in the distance ahead of you.
And they were looking at, you know, they're like, he was like, don't get in the boat.
Yeah, yeah. But you can see in the distance. I mean, you can see, you could probably see a good, like maybe 100 yards.
Yeah.
You can see things 100 yards ahead of you in the Miss America 10.
But not when you're flying 90 miles.
Yeah, but
an
you
hour.
Can't see within anything that's anywhere near proximity of that monster. You can't see anything. The front of that boat sticks up in the air. That thing is imagine if it's belting smoke and fumes and all this other stuff. They're just going on. I mean, it's just it's an absolutely incredible.
And they are literally straddling that engine.
Yeah, and the engine is the whole boat is the engine.
Yeah,
like the whole engine is the boat. Like when you're looking at that thing, and with some of the
people
pictures
talking
we have
about
on
motorcycles
the screen,
being a crotch rocket, it's it's but this thing.
But
is,
look at the we have a couple of photos up on the screen. If you're listening to it, take a look at some of these. Just even the pictures we have, even look up Miss America 10 because these pictures are pretty well. These are from my book, but you can see these similar
available
pictures on the internet.
Available
now at DetroitCityOfChampions.com. But these engines are just ridiculous.
Yeah.
They're ridiculous. And when you see the size of the boat and you see two little guys in the back of it, I mean, the guys look like little ants and they're in the back of some kind of a freighter or something. This boat is ridiculous.
Yeah.
So this is the boat. I mean, could you imagine being on that shoreline, you know? And maybe you hadn't been, you know, anybody that lived in that area probably saw them warming up with this thing going, my God, look at that monster. You know, look at that boat they're testing
out. What the hell
is
that noise?
But imagine you're just there for the race. Imagine you're just there for the, imagine you're just, you're just there for the first day. You know, you're riding one of these boats. It's your first, you know, you haven't been watching them train and stuff. But you see the boat that they're unleashing for this race. It's the Miss America 10.
Things don't move 100 miles an hour in these days.
Yeah. So they're looking at this, you know, but imagine this, the first time you see that boat coming out for this race, you're like, man, Garwood is crazy. Like, look at that boat that they're driving, you know? They're like, well, they're not going to let them beat them in that Rolls-Royce engines. They're going to take them down with Packards, you know? They just had to strap four of them together to get the thing done. So it's just, it's like I say, we're sort of drawn towards the next week. We're going to kind of wrap up the story with a big conclusion episode.
Yeah.
But this was like, you know, this was by far the most dramatic, of the sort of final races, because after this, the English are going to be demoralized.
Sure.
What are their, like, this was their best effort. They're, you know, it's been year after year after year of them trying to beat Garwood with the best, you know, with, you know, the Seagrave died and they've got, you know, Wakefield is spending ridiculous sums of money building boats. They're losing. They keep losing every year. They boat after boat. They have the best engines. They have the best, you know, drivers. They have the best everything. And it's not working. So they're just basically after this, they're going to be demoralized. I mean, he's not losing the Harmsworth, you know, like.
So it just put it in perspective. The cars, this is 1932. Most of the cars in 1932 could go like 35, 40 miles an hour. There's a with a good tailwind and the right circumstances, you could crank it up to 55, maybe 65, right? But that's like controlled circumstances. And
well, this
so generally speaking, cars are going about 40 miles an hour top speed. And then all these people are down there watching these boats going 90, 100 miles an hour.
Well, so here's the thing. So I do want to point out one thing.
That's nuts.
So here's the thing. Is that during this race, because of the rain, because of the circumstances.
Yeah.
So number one, Garwood wins his seventh consecutive Harmsworth, right?
Yeah.
And so the Miss America 10 during this race only averaged 78 miles an hour during the race because of all the elements. So it led to the question, how fast is she really, right?
Yeah.
When Garwood set the world record, you know, that's why I mentioned at the beginning.
Right.
In January, he'd used the Miss America 9 and they'd maxed out at 111.
Yeah.
And then the Miss England 3 beat Garwood with 119.82 miles an hour.
Yeah.
So now they got the madman's dream out on the river.
What can Miss X do with those engines?
And so they take this thing out there and it's 124.86 miles an hour. They take this thing out. Yes.
New record?
Yeah, 100, absolutely. So they take this thing out and 124.86 miles an hour. So they crushed that record. Their record stands for like I think 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody touched that record after that. So yeah, nobody challenged Garwood. Like you'd be crazy to challenge him at this point. So I've got like one little last like quote that I wanted to read that doesn't really fit into the total narrative.
All right, does that have something to do with those cartoons?
Exactly. We have a little cartoon image to show up on the screen.
Yeah.
And so one of the interesting sort of writers of the 1930s was a guy named Paul Gallico.
Okay.
And Paul Gallico,
Gallico the Great.
Well, one of the things that kind of made him cool, if you're an aspiring journalist, you know, this might be of interest to you. One of the things that he did, which was really interesting, was he actually participated in some of the events that they covered.
Oh.
Like, so
participatory in journalism.
Exactly.
That's George Plimpton.
The photo we have, it's what we have on
George
the...
George Plimpton.
So what we... Exactly, like a George Plimpton. Exactly that, where George Plimpton had Paper Lion, where mm-hmm. he was, at, you know, played with the Lions, the quarterback.
I got to interview him.
Exactly. Oh, did you really?
Yeah, we had him on. He wrote a book about the letters to Dr. Rolfe, and this veterinarian goes missing. And there, people are writing in, and the pets are writing in, asking questions about Dr. Rolfe. But he had like the best voice.
Really?
And it was just I just sitting there listening to him. It was.
I remember watching them. I never read the book, but the paper line in the movie was just so cool.
Yeah.
It's like
Alan Alda played.
Yeah.
So he did. He played. He practiced with the Lions for
and
the
whole
preseason.
And he was quarterback. Yeah, which is
and
a tough
played,
job.
He played one down in the preseason.
Yeah,
game
that's but that's tough as it is.
Oh yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I remember when Will Ferrell played. He got if. There was a spring training in baseball like maybe 8 years ago.
Yeah.
And he was, you know, quote unquote traded to 9 different teams in that same spring training. And they like helicoptered into all these different spring trainings.
Yeah.
And he actually played like one inning of each, for each different, for 9
getting,
different teams.
He was getting traded
at a different position.
Oh, wow.
And so it was kind of like so he played like catcher. I don't think he played for a full inning each thing. It was like one appearance, like one pitch or something.
Yeah.
And so,
so funny.
But I watched it live. I watched a couple of I think it was two of the different teams that I heard about it. I'm like, oh man. So I tuned in and started watching it.
Yeah.
And there was a moment where he was in left field. That's when I like sort of tuned in. And you're like, You're watching an actor out on a field with major leaguers, and you can actually feel it through the screen. You're like, oh my God, like, is this guy going to be okay? Because like you see the differential in talent when you see a guy kind of going out there to this, and then you see, you know, these stars are, you know, you're talking about major leaguers. And so that's what I'm saying, like, for George Plimpton to go out there as a quarterback, even for one, you know, for however many, what was it, say one snap, was it?
Yeah, well, yeah, he played a quarter.
I think he played a quarter or something. Yeah. That's intense. That's tough to do. You're playing with people that are at the very pinnacle of their professions and elite athletes in every
regard. So this Gallico did something similar with Garwood?
Exactly. Not only with Garwood, but we have it up on the screen for this picture. It's a little cartoon image, and they're kind of hyping Gallico. The cartoon image is kind of small on the screen, but it says Gallico the Great, America's top sports writer.
Okay.
And I'll kind of read a little caption.
It's much bigger in the book if you want to buy the book.
Yeah, it's much bigger in the book.
We do like these episodes, and they're all focused around your book, and we hardly ever plug the book.
Yeah,
and you're modest, and you don't plug the book.
Well, I don't even think about it, honestly.
People should buy the book.
Well, here's the thing is when I used to sell books at art shows, like, I would just be telling stories of the City of Champions season,
and
I'd almost forget to even pitch
the
book.
It's like, oh, crap, all these stories are in this book.
Well, people would cut me off and be like, you know, they're like, I'll take it. I'll be like, hold on a second. Forget about that for a second. Let me finish the story. Let me get a copy.
Just give me the book. I'll read the rest of it.
Give me your book, and I'll go. And I'm like, okay, sweet. All right. Next person come up. And then I'd start from the beginning, like, you know, it'd start from the beginning. I'd tell the story 100 times a day, and I'd have to start from the beginning every single time.
Are you having fun doing this?
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
The greatest thing about this show, besides hanging out with you, which I love hanging out with you, Jamie.
I'm having fun.
But I think what I love about this is being able to, like, when I used to do art shows, like I was just about to say there.
You got
to
start over.
I have to start the story. It was like Groundhog's Day.
Yep.
1,000 times a day. Because every time a person would walk by, I'd have to start from the very beginning.
Well, it's Groundhog's Day again.
Yeah, exactly. They're like, you know, like.
We're gobblers now.
A representation of my day in a nutshell would be like. Somebody would look at my sign that said, did you know that the Tigers, Lions, Red Wings all won their first championship same season?
Really? Did they really?
There you go. And I'd be like. Yes, they did.
As a matter of fact.
Yes, they did. And I'd be like, yes, you know, in 1935 is usually the first question they have is what year was it?
Yeah.
Yes. And so, I'd get so many questions, you know, at the same time, the same questions, I would be able to guess what they were going to be like. Let me guess what you're going to say next, you know. That was kind of like my hook, and then I would just jump into telling the story.
Mm-hmm.
But it'd be over and over and over again, like hundreds of times a day. And so that's what I love doing the show, because we get to dive in. I can point out a comic strip with Paul Gallico and talk about this guy for a second.
All right, we got way sidetracked, but Gallico.
Well, yeah, so they say right here in the little cartoon, it's kind of small on the screen, but sports writing from Paul Gallico tried everything from a crack in the jaw by Dempsey to catching Dizzy Dean's fastball just to tell his readers what it felt like. So in the little cartoon strip, there's five different main images. It said the KO did not bother Gallico. In the next few years, he persuaded the stars in all sports to give him a crack. He caught the famous fastball of Dizzy Dean, star pitcher for the St. Louis Cardinals. And then there's a picture of him in a business suit, you know, in a suit, catching a football from a guy in a leather helmet. It says he caught the bullet-like pass of Benny Friedman, University of Michigan football star, who went on to play for the New York Giants.
Michigan.
And then he raced Johnny Weissmuller in a pool. So he's swimming. Come on, Gallico, you slowpoke. He's getting, you know, he's losing
my doggy paddling.
He's losing to Johnny Weissmuller, who at the first Tarzan. You know, it says, he raced and he raced Cliff Bergeret's racing car, and he's in this, like, you know, he's, you know, behind the wheel of this race car with a fin on the back, and then it said Garwood gave Paul a crack at his speedball, and so here, so I actually have a quote. In J. Lee Barrett, go-to. So talking about the experience Paul Gallico had, this is not in the cartoon image. That's what I'm saying. I connected this cartoon I found with a quote from J. Lee Barrett talking about the time that Paul Gallico went for a ride with Garwood in the Miss America 10. So this is again J. Lee Barrett, Speedball Kings. Wood took Paul Gallico, famous sports writer, for a ride in the Miss America 10. When they came back to the boat well, Wood turned to Gallico and said, "Well, Paul, how was the ride?" Gallico swept the riding helmet from his head and answered nervously, "It's like riding to Mars on the tail of a comet." So that's Paul Gallico there. And then I have another quick
one. Boy, it's faster than anything happened.
Yeah.
Cars are maxing out at 50 miles an hour. They're rocking it. And on the water, I mean, because 50 miles an hour on the highway feels like something. 50 miles an hour on the water, feels like something else entirely. And when the highest speed ever, you know, your highest speeds on the road generally are like 35 miles an hour, that's got to be insane.
Well, it's like
that's
got
to be riding to Mars in the tail of a comet.
It's like that video that our buddy Chris shared with us with the video with Charles Mistely pushing the Miss America 9.
Yeah, and the reporter in there and his face just
And they're like, this
away.
Is crazy. Yeah.
And that's just a Sunday ride.
Yeah, exactly. Where he's like, you know, they're like, this is speed. You know, they're ripping on the river. Yeah. And so I actually have another quote here and this is again in Speedball Kings by Jaylee Barrett, where he asked Orlin Johnson about the experience. So Jaylee Barrett says, I asked Orlin Johnson one day what it feels like to ride in these fast boats. Well, he said, someday take the springs and tires off your automobile. Take the car over to the nearest railroad track and put it across the ties at 50 miles an hour. That's what it feels like. So ripping down the railroad tracks at 50 miles an hour.
It hurts.
Yeah, they take a beating. This is not, you know, for the faint of heart.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was my last little bit. I just wanted to share about the, you know, what it felt like to ride the Miss America 10 because the thing about it is that you saw, you know, one of the things we mentioned here, you know, in this was that they took it out. It took them a dozen times just to try to get it to plane.
Yeah.
And then it only planed after they were pushing it on the race, and by a miracle it planed or whatever. So modern day people, if the Miss America 10 were ever to be seaworthy again,
yeah,
would it ever be able to plane like they were able to, like, you know, it took the best mechanics, like, the sun, you know, like the sun shining down on this one incredible moment,
right,
to get the Miss America 10 up on her plane.
Yeah.
Their laps were covered in benzol, and they said, full throttle, we're risking our lives regardless. That's what it took to get that boat. Like, and that's why we make such a great movie moment, is that it planed. Like, how many times did this boat, we have one more race to talk about.
Yeah.
But like I say, the number of times that boat actually planed the way it was supposed to was, like, you know, such a fleeting moment and just the most, like, you know, the pinnacle of this golden era of, you know, the development of speed on water. Like, that's the moment where that boat is planing, like, through this miracle. So, like, would we ever, if we even put the Miss America, you know, the Miss America 9 is cool to roll around in the river with. You know, they have modern day engines pushing it, and they're able to drive it around.
Yeah, yeah.
But the Miss America 10 is a totally different animal.
Yeah.
Getting that boat back in the river and getting that thing, you might be able to, if you had enough money, you get the engines back in, you could probably drive it around. But getting that beast, the madman's dream, to 126 mile an hour up on her plane.
Yeah.
That I just don't see, like, you know, like, the dedication it takes to do that, I just don't think that would ever, you know, I mean, it would just be kind of a miracle to make it happen like that.
That is just bloody dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
I love these stories, man.
I know.
That's what I'm saying.
This is why it's my favorite stories, though. I mean, it's my favorite.
Working my way through this.
Yeah, me too. That's what I'm saying. Like, yeah, of all the stars, we're going to get through it, you know, next week a little bit about just how big Gar Wood was. That's sort of the conclusion I wanted to bring out next week was,
well, the last two races, the numbers of people that came out to these races.
The biggest events in human history.
Phenomenal.
Yes. We already walked, a few episodes ago, we went down the list of the biggest sporting events of all time.
Yeah.
And this is as big or bigger or any of them. Yeah. Exactly, yeah. It never gets mentioned, of course.
No.
It's never even mentioned as a possibility of being in that category.
It's Detroit.
Because it's a forgotten component of, I mean, all of this stuff is forgotten. The whole story's forgotten. I mean, they forget the fact that the baseline fact that the three teams won their first championships in the same season.
Yeah.
So why would they remember the fact that the Gar Wood races were the biggest races in
history? New England came close. They were talking all about it.
A couple times, yeah.
Nope. Florida came close that one season. Nope.
Boston got close. They got to game 7 of the Stanley Cup championship.
Yeah.
If they would have won, they would have won all three. And a Boston Globe writer called me one day.
Yeah, okay.
And he was like, can we get a quote in case that Boston wins three championships in the same season? I'm like,
here's my quote.
I was like,
ain't gonna happen.
No, I didn't say that, but I was like, well, you know, I told him, I said,
what did you say?
Well, I just told him, I said, I'm like, well, if you do, you know, I mean, it's a major accomplishment because nobody's done it since.
Right.
You know, I mean, the last time, the nearest attempt previously to Boston getting into game 7 of the Stanley Cup was just a couple years ago was when the Patriots went 18-0.
Yeah.
They won every single game. They were the last team that had to win it. You had Tom Brady in the Super Bowl.
Right.
18-0, they were going to win the Super Bowl, and they lost the Super Bowl after going 18-0 and didn't go. And that was the year I was about to publish my first book. And so I was like, and I told the guy, I was like, if you do it, that's a big deal. The coolest thing.
We got to get Tom Brady on here.
I even told the guy, the writer, I said, I'm not even rooting against you because any reason to get this story out.
Yeah.
Because if the Boston had done it, at the very least, they would have been saying city has done it since 1935. And maybe that would have triggered a couple people to look into this story. You know what I mean? Like, Detroit did in 35. I never knew that.
I could sell a couple more copies and don't have to eat Swanson dinners.
Well, I'm not.
We can up that to Stouffer's.
Well, I'm not. I wasn't even thinking
I'm
about
the.
No, you know, I'm not even thinking about that. I'm thinking about the visibility of this story.
I'm busting your chest.
No, I know you are. But I'm saying, but it's the visibility of the story about, no matter, for the last 12 years of trying to get this story out, there's no, nobody, the Detroit media, the teams, they act like this is like this, like it either never happened or it's just some random rantings of a madman.
Charles,
it's like,
I think we got a nice package here. And I think we got it. You have you've collected. I can't take any credit for this.
Yeah, but your help. But here's the thing is that
I'm just sitting here enjoying you telling me this.
Yeah,
stories.
But the City of Champions story. I've said this from the very beginning. I put this.
Lucky
enough to be able to put all this. Yeah, but Jamie, you're part of the story. Everybody that's listening is part of the story. This story doesn't. I've said this from the beginning. It doesn't belong to me. Like, my role in this entire story was to lay, because there's all these, anybody that's ever, heard about this, or, there's always these, Detroit won a bunch of championships in 1935, or, Joe Louis was big, or, the Tigers did this. There's all these, mythology, if you heard anything at all.
Right.
You heard mythology. My role in this was to lay down the facts into a concrete, to combine all the factual components of this and to separate fact from fiction, to say this is what happened, make my cases, especially in the book, as ironclad as I could make it, so that I could lay down the foundation and say this is what actually happened, right? And then based
and
upon
just
this,
just because it was before World War II. Please don't discredit it.
Well, yeah, but as a historian, that was my role, was to lay down the facts and say this is what actually happened. And then whatever happens after this, I've been from the very beginning, I have been opening this thing up to anyone who wanted to join in, because like I say, my role is as a historian and to say this is what happened. Now let's celebrate it. The city, the teams, anybody that wanted to be a part of this. I could have copyrighted some of this stuff, like the City of Champions concept and all this different stuff.
Right.
I could have trademarked half this stuff, and I didn't do any of that because I didn't want to. I wanted other people to be able to take the how great this was and roll with it in their own way. You know what I mean? And you're, like I say, you are part of this story, Jamie.
Because I'm enjoying the hell out of it.
Good. But I'm saying, you are a major part of this. Anybody that's listening to this at home.
Because I do. I want to see this. I want to see this go. I would love to see this Garwood. I got a couple of people. I'm going to make them listen to this podcast. Turn this into something for me.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying.
It's the people that are listening and following along and joining us for the party. We appreciate
everybody
it.
Chris is a major component of the City of Champions. He helped start the Wikipedia page for Champions. Chris is the one that did all the tech work for the City of Champions Wikipedia page. Which has grown massively.
He checked in again today. Checked in, so we want to thank Jesse.
Absolutely. What's up, Jesse?
And then, but everybody who's listening, subscribe, all the podcast stuff.
The main thing is that this is not my story.
Right.
This is, I have the books out, yes. And maybe one of the reasons I don't pitch the books all the time is I don't even feel like this is my story. I do feel, however, I do feel that I'm a protector of it. Mm-hmm. I protect it. I do not let, like, I've had a couple of people along the way that wanted to, like, turn this into, you know, to do things with it, to take it different directions. And I'm like, that's why I wrote the screenplay. I didn't write the screenplay because I felt like I'm like, oh, I'm going to have to be the best screenwriter in Hollywood. I never thought about that at all. My main role is that if I wrote the screenplay and I took the best components of this story, like all the components, take the true story of this and convert it into a screenplay, then what it does is it protects the story from anybody that comes along like a fly-by-night and goes, oh, the City of Champions, that'd be a great story. And then they turn it into some crap film.
Yeah.
And they use you know, a couple of basic components and turn it into a crap film.
Right.
I wrote the screenplay to protect the story so that if anybody comes along, that if they're going to use the main components, especially out of my book, which is what I use for the screenplay, that they're infringing on my trademark, my copyright of the screenplay, my idea, and I thus protect it. So I do consider myself a protector of the truth of this story.
The story is so good as it is.
It doesn't need to be changed. It doesn't need to be Hollywoodized.
It doesn't need that Hollywood spin. It doesn't need. There's enough drama. There's enough conflict. There's enough
all
drama.
Of it.
You know, Joe Louis.
All of it.
How much conflict can you get into one human being?
Exactly.
And the things he had to face and overcome and do.
Yeah.
And Edgar Wood, the grit, the
every single race, they got to tear it apart. You know, like they're like, tear it apart, boys. We got to tear it apart.
It's like the never say die. Yeah. We got to do it harder,
and
faster,
all of
better.
This stuff is happening at the same time. Like this
risk,
is that's what's
so
incredible
with 18 months, right?
Yeah. This was 32 with Garwood. Again, we're gonna
right.
You so, know, yeah. Spoiler alert, but Garwood didn't even race in 35, but he had, but there was. We'll get to that. Next
he was
week,
so revered.
He was challenged in 35, but nobody had. He was when he started talking about doing a Miss America 11, they backed off in 1935. So he walked in, but that's what we're going to talk about a little bit about next week. Was the impact of Garwood in his day? Is that when Garwood, like I've got this fantastic picture we're going to show next week. In fact, I put it in my notes to make sure that we show the image next week. When the Tigers won the World Series, the Tigers won the World Series. Their victory party, Garwood was like the guest of honor.
Right.
The fact that Garwood showed up at the Tigers victory party for the World Series was like the honor of the Tigers, that he would make himself available for that, for their party. They won the first World Series in Detroit history, and Garwood was there. You know, like he was absolutely revered. He was a Babe Ruthian figure in his day.
Yeah.
And that's what we're trying to bring out. Like, speedboat racing, like, you know, it's the, you know, in the public consciousness, somewhat declined, of course. I mean, not somewhat, a lot.
Yeah.
But in his day, he was a star amongst, he was a superstar amongst stars.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was the guy. He was one of the most famous people in the world, and he was a Detroiter. He was the one that brought, you know, he brought glory. And especially in 32, the years we're talking about here.
Yeah.
There was nothing else. The Tigers were garbage.
No.
The Red Wings were in the middle of their second team name. In fact, it became the Red Wings in between 32 and 33.
Yeah.
I mean, they had just become known as Red Wings. The Lions didn't even exist.
Yeah.
There was nothing there. Garwood was Detroit sports, and he was a Ruthian figure.
Right.
So, anyways, yeah.
All right. Like, subscribe, leave a comment. We're gonna do more. We got more about.
We got one more episode on Garwood, and then we're going. Then we're going into Walter Hagen.
Oh my God! Okay.
Wait till we go into Walter Hagen's a great story too.
Gotta tee it up.
Well, Walter Hagen's a great story. We're gonna be talking golf. Golf history.
I love it.
Pro golf history. Walter Hagen was pro. There, like the story of pro golf history.
Yeah.
Is Walter Hagen? So we're gonna be getting into.
We're gonna see if we get
a couple episodes away. But we're
see if we get Bob Krause in here to join us for some golf.
We'll talk. Yeah, we'll talk.
All right. So there you go. Like, subscribe, leave a comment. Thank you for joining us. It is Detroit City of Champions. Wherever you're on the Facebook, YouTube, any audio listening device, just follow along. Thank you. Tell a couple friends. And Charles, thank you.
My pleasure, Jamie. Thank you, man, for all the work you do too. Do not diminish your role in the City of Champions story. We're all part of this. We're trying to bring the story back. You are just as much a part of it as I am. I do not Like I say, my role is the facts and figures.
I'm having fun.
You do well, dude. The broadcasting,
story time for me.
You do a ton of work behind the scenes, and I am absolutely grateful for all the work you do.
It's all good,
even to be able to get it to the listener, there's a ton of work for you that are listening on. There's a ton of work that goes on behind the scenes. And Jamie does like 99% of it. I do the little bios on it. I send Jamie the bio. He uploads it.
It's teamwork. It is teamwork.
That's what I'm saying. You're as much a part of this as anything, Jamie. You built the studios. You get this thing going. So don't ever diminish by any means your role. We all are. If anybody that loves this story and wants this thing to come back, everyone that joins in, no matter what component they fill, it's a group effort. You know what I mean? It's a group effort towards bringing it all out. So,
all right. Thanks, everybody. Chris, listening in, everybody around with us. We'll see you next time. It's Detroit, City of Champions, the podcast.